This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
I'm inside my apartment right now on the second floor, but within that, I live in an apartment complex where there's hundreds of people that live here. And the first day, which was Sunday, we got an email from our apartment that there was a lady about to have a baby on the first floor.
That was South Sudanese native Tabata Awar, who lives with her family in Houston. Full details coming up.
Also, Kenya's Supreme Court has until Friday to give its final ruling on the accusation by the opposition coalition that the voting system was hacked. And a group of European and African leaders have agreed on an outline of a plan that would screen Africans seeking asylum in Europe.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenya's Supreme Court granted the opposition access to all official tally forms and the Electoral Commission's computer servers. The ruling came as the start of official hearings Monday on the opposition's challenge to presidential poll results, showing President Uhuru Kenyatta defeating Raila Odinga by about 1.4 million votes. Since Election Day, the National Super Alliance, or NASA, opposition coalition has argued that the voting system was hacked, leading to what they call a stolen election. The rest of yesterday's hearing was scheduled for Odinga and Kenyatta's lawyers to argue their sides of the case, as well as the Electoral Commission to defend the integrity of its voting systems. The Supreme Court has until Friday to give its final ruling.
A group of European and African leaders agreed yesterday to an outline of a plan that would screen Africans seeking asylum in Europe in their countries of origin, rather than requiring they first make the often dangerous trip across the Mediterranean Sea. French President Emmanuel Macron hosted a summit yesterday in Paris aimed at finding ways to better deal with illegal migration and called the agreement announced in a joint statement the most immediate, the most effective answer to the crisis. The International Organization for Migration says about 121,000 people have arrived in Europe by sea this year, the vast majority of them in Italy. More than 2,400 people have either died or gone missing making the crossing. The joint statement yesterday highlighted the need to start the resettlement of refugees in Chad and Niger, seeking to cut out the role of smugglers who take people through the desert and pack them onto boats bound for Europe. The process would allow the refugees to legally go to Europe if they are on an eligibility list provided by the UN's refugee agency and are registered with authorities in Niger and Chad. UN Refugee Chief Filippo Grandi welcomed the plan, saying the approach focusing only on cutting the number of arrivals does not end up solving the problem. Niger's President Mahamadou Issoufou said the plan includes working on development in order to give smugglers an alternative to criminal activities. Chad's President Idriss Deby also cited the challenges that poverty, unemployment, and poor education pose for those who decide to try to reach Europe, saying those elements must be taken into account. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said providing a future for refugees in Europe is only possible if distinctions are made between what she called real refugees and those who are choosing to leave home for other reasons. She said those who want to go to Europe for economic reasons must return to their country.
Well, in the U.S., waters have continued to rise in the flooded areas of Texas and Louisiana, causing what the National Weather Service calls an unprecedented crisis At least 6 people have died and an estimated 30,000 have been evacuated from their homes and placed into shelters. Officials are praising the cooperation between federal and state governments, private groups, and ordinary citizens in an effort to save lives. President Donald Trump is scheduled to visit the disaster area today. VOA's Zlatissa Hoke reports.
Rescue teams in helicopters were pulling stranded people from the most flooded areas in Texas on Monday. Residents used small boats to reach neighbors and others trapped in their homes. Local firefighters joined the rescue efforts. Edmundo Venegas told VOA's Latin American service that his team helped evacuate a flooded community in northern Houston.
We're using army trucks, school buses, and our apparatus to get everybody out.
Evacuated residents expressed relief.
I'm blessed that they came and got us because it could have been so much worse. So I'm happy.
On Monday, President Donald Trump praised the first responders and others involved in rescue efforts.
We see neighbor helping neighbor, friend helping friend, and stranger helping stranger. And you see that all over. You watch on television, you just see such incredible work and love.
The president pledged the federal government's full support to the affected parts of Texas and Louisiana and said 8,500 federal workers are already involved in the Texas effort.
Recovery will be a long and difficult road, and the federal government stands ready, willing, and able to support that effort.
The damage to homes and infrastructure is already visible days before the rain is expected to abate. But officials say their first priority is saving people's lives. Texas Governor Greg Abbott said work to restore electrical power will begin in a day or two.
Without that power, you have a hard time functioning. And so we are pressing forward constantly to make sure that the power is restored.
Trump also approved emergency funds for the neighboring state of Louisiana on Monday at the request of Governor John Bel Edwards.
Of course, it's going to drop a lot of rain the entire time, and as it moves further east, we can expect that those rain bands will also move further east. And so in all likelihood, the worst is yet to come for us in Louisiana.
The Trump administration's budget proposal unveiled in March envisions substantial cuts in federal emergency and flood aid programs. But the president said recovery efforts in Texas and Louisiana will need billions of dollars in aid, which will have to be approved by Congress. Zlatissa Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
The Texas Attorney General says Hurricane Harvey is probably the biggest storm in Texas history, as mentioned earlier. 3 days after it hit the coast as Category 4 hurricane, the storm continues to unrelenting rain, transforming streets into rivers. South Sudanese native Tabata Awor, who lives with her family in Houston, says the floods forced her family and neighbors to stay inside. But when one of her neighbors went into labor during the hurricane, the entire community responded to make sure mother and baby were safe.
I'm inside my apartment right now on the second floor, but within that, I live in an apartment complex where there's hundreds of people that live here. And the first day, with the Sunday, we got an email from our apartment that there was a lady about to have a baby on the first floor, and she was getting water inside her apartment. So I remember I went downstairs, and there was a doctor that lives under us, and I was like, did you get the email? And so I remember that being the most like, oh my goodness, we have to help this lady. But the whole apartment complex, it was a river, but we all were running, trying to go to save, to help this lady with her baby. And that we had an OB living here because we live by the medical center, thankfully. So a bunch of doctors went there, and this guy that my neighbor, he's a medicine doctor, but he had some things with him, you know, and he ran over there. So I saw them airlift the lady to the hospital, you know. I mean, that's something. I mean, National Guards all over around our apartments and people walking outside trying to see what's going on. And we can't walk any farther because there's water around the apartment complex. We can only walk between the apartments. She had the baby and she's fine. We got an email yesterday. The mom and the baby are okay.
That's great to hear. Tabitha, you yourself are 5 months pregnant. What's it been like for you?
I was super nervous and just, you know, but I just couldn't sit in my bed and just lay there. I just remember walking outside and just, you know, trying to see what I could do. I'm fine, but I'm just nervous for those women out there that are due today or yesterday. When you know you can't go anywhere, the main roads and the hospitals, there's a lot of hospitals that are closed that don't have a helicopter, you know, to land on top. So there's only a few hospitals that are open.
How did you prepare for such an enormous storm?
Well, Thursday, we got gas. We shop. We prepare a lot. You know, one thing that we did, we have a garage. We parked both of our cars in the garage, thankfully. So now we have two cars that are good, but everyone in our apartment, there's half of the people here, their cars are destroyed. You know, they can't drive them.
Tabitha, did you and your family lose any services?
Yeah, we didn't have TV. We didn't have internet and TV on Sunday, which that was the worst day, because we didn't know what was going on. And so but we just got our internet and TV back yesterday, about 5 yesterday. So now we are able to see what's going on around us. And the phones were very slow because everyone else is using, you know, their service and no internet.
Have the rain stopped? Has the flood subsided?
No, it's been raining. It's been raining since Friday. The rain is not stopping. Yesterday, it's windy right now. It's windy and raining. But right now, the problem is the rivers are overflowing. So so that's the scariest part.
That was South Sudanese native Tabitha Awor from Houston, Texas, talking to VOA's Ayan Bior.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Kenya's Supreme Court has until Friday to give its final ruling on the accusation by the opposition coalition that the voting system was hacked. A group of European and African leaders have agreed on an outline of a plan that would screen Africans seeking asylum in Europe. And waters have continued to rise in the flooded areas of Texas and Louisiana, causing what the National Weather Service calls an unprecedented crisis. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari defeated incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan in early 2015 by running on an anti-corruption platform. VOA senior analyst Jeffrey Young discusses with a group of analysts whether Buhari's promised crackdown on bribery and other official malfeasance is producing tangible results.
The May 2015 inauguration of Muhammadu Buhari as Nigeria's president marked the first peaceful transfer of executive power in that country. Buhari, who earlier ruled Nigeria from 1983 to 1985 as the head of a military coup, came into office in 2015 as a civilian, pledging to clean up the rampant government corruption that stained predecessor Goodluck Jonathan's administration. Standing in the way of Buhari's anti-corruption pledge is, according to one Nigerian law professor, a culture of compliance. Via Skype from Cape Town's Stellenbosch University is Sophie Williams-Elijbi.
The cultural landscape does not allow you to push back on your superior who is doing something that is, you know, that is unethical or is wrong.
But President Buhari broke through that tradition of looking the other way, giving new energy to Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission and strongly promoting so-called whistleblower laws by which workers can report corrupt government officials. Buhari's efforts, including action against former oil minister Dizani Alison Madueke, are reviewed via Skype from London by watchdog NGO Global Witness analyst Barnaby Pace.
They've seized a lot of assets in Nigeria, including reportedly Alison Madueke's property there and properties allegedly belonging to the former president, Goodluck Jonathan's wife. At the same time, they're trying to prosecute officials like the former Attorney General, Mohamed Adoki, who they're trying to extradite from Netherlands to face corruption charges.
For Buhari's government and any government to be seen as genuinely fighting corruption, the investigation and prosecution of suspected officials has to be conducted evenly and thoroughly, regardless of political affiliation. Not only to preserve the legitimacy of the effort before the law, but also in the eyes of the Nigerian public. President Buhari's campaign comes up short in this critical aspect, according to former U.S. State Department expert on Nigeria, Matthew Page, via Skype.
People close to Buhari, people at senior levels within the current ruling party, Buhari's party, have been given a get-out-of-jail-free card, at least for the time being, in terms of their past history and their current corrupt dealings. And that has disillusioned many Nigerians and opened up Buhari to the criticism that his anti-corruption crusade is somewhat selective in its scope.
Mr. Page and numerous other Nigeria watchers say the anti-corruption effort takes commitment by lawmakers to pass stronger whistleblower measures and tougher penalties for corruption. Also needed, they say, is a Nigerian judiciary willing to take strong action against those officials caught violating the trust of their office. A successful fight to clean up Nigeria's government needs widespread support, according to, again via Skype, law professor Sophie Williams-Elijibi.
Buhari is trying, but it's not a one-man job. There's a limit to what he can do as a president. The machinery of government, the public, the country has to support him and have to believe in what he's doing.
But there are forces working against reform. On Wednesday, August 16, gunmen in Abuja attacked the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission. While there were no casualties, the gunmen left a written death threat against EFCC senior investigator Ishaku Sharu. This after another attack against an EFCC investigator in Port Harcourt. Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
Global climate change continues to increase, and with it, the number and severity of droughts. Droughts kill trees. That in turn contributes to global warming. But how exactly do droughts kill trees, and can the death of trees and forests be predicted? A new report in the journal Nature, Ecology and Evolution looks at these questions. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with plant biologist Henry Adams of Oklahoma State University. Professor Adams led a team of 62 scientists who conducted the study.
We really want to know what it takes to kill a tree. It's obvious if you don't have water, that eventually a tree will die. But how do we know when it's been enough stress that that will result in death? How do we predict that? The idea is that if we know how trees die, then we might be able to better predict when they will die. And so the goal of the study was to bring together data from a number of experiments and other studies, and let's look at this as one whole picture altogether and see what it tells us about how trees die.
Now, this is of particular relevance now, isn't it? Or increasing relevance, I should say, as climate change and worse and more frequent droughts make themselves felt, correct?
That's right. In the last couple decades, there's been widespread tree mortality now documented on, every continent where you find trees, where you see whole forests turning brown and dying.
Is this happening in Africa too?
Yes, it is, such as with Atlas cedar in Algeria. And I believe you can find some woody plants in South Africa where this has happened as well.
So how do trees die from drought?
Well, one thing that's pretty obvious, so the lack of water, right? That's a problem. And what's a tree normally doing in regards to water? Trees don't have pumps, right? They don't pump their water from the roots to the leaves. They have to depend on just a natural pull from the atmosphere on the water, and the water moves from the soil through the roots up the stems into the leaves. You can think of the tension of water moving from the soil to the leaves like a rope of water being pulled out of the plant. And if there's a lot of pulling on the other end because it's very dry, tension will increase. If there's not enough supply in the soil, that tension will also increase. And that can literally break the system by which trees move water.
And of course, there would naturally be more pulling from the atmosphere through the plants when the air is very warm and dry, as in a drought, right?
Right. You can form a bubble in the stem of a tree that blocks the flow of water. That's one way that we look at how trees die in drought.
I understand that trees actually have pores, which they close during droughts to retain water. But that strategy can hasten death in another way. Can you explain how that works?
So I explained that dangerous situation where the atmosphere is sort of pulling harder and harder and could cause problems. And so what trees can do to avoid that problem is to close these pores by which water leaves the leaves. The problem is trees need carbon that's in the air in the form of carbon dioxide to carry out photosynthesis. So photosynthesis, we're talking about trees taking carbon out of the atmosphere and making their own food. They use the energy from the sun to do this. Now, water leaves through these pores called stomata. Carbon comes in through these pores. So if you close the pores, the carbon can't get in, so they can't make their food. If that goes on for long enough, they might simply starve from not being able to make enough food for themselves.
And if the trees die, that's bad for us, right?
That's a good question. If trees die, is it bad for us? People like shade. Shade can be very important, so you can have a very local reason. But what trees do for us, they actually take a lot of carbon out of the atmosphere that would otherwise be warming the planet. At a global level, trees and forests can cool the planet.
Now, what's the best possible use for this kind of knowledge? Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
My motivation for studying climate change is that if we can tell more people about how this will affect their lives and will affect things that are important to them, and trees are important to many people, then we can maybe show what might happen in the future, and we can maybe inspire people to take action.
That was Oklahoma State University plant biologist Henry Adams. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. That wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. on the internet. You can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.